This week's episode of Tribal Research Specialists, the podcast, a podcast about tribal people, our communities, and discussions on research traditions. We aim to uncover the true meaning of research methodological approaches that are currently operating in tribal life, with implications for tribal communities and avenues for knowledge production. One of these mystery tracks from this collection of reel to reels again from that was gifted to my mom from Larry Parker, and it sounds like to me that song sounds like the old Red album, the old Red Bull Red tape. You know what I'm talking about? It kind of has this this sound that is reminiscent of that particular style. Now, I don't know for sure, but I would hope that someone listening would say, oh, yeah, that's these guys, and it was recorded around this time. I don't know. We haven't had anybody do that yet. I'm always hopeful that somebody will, but they haven't. But you know what's important about this, I think this going along this path right here is you know, the telling of stories or the sharing of information and experiences, it can reveal some knowledge that we may or may not know that might be based in fact, might be based on, you know, some experience of some person. So I think the sharing of these mystery reels hopefully will illustrate or not illustrate, but, bring to light where these recordings may have been recorded. And I think one of the challenges today in this idea of all these tribes sharing knowledge and sharing this information around is that, you know, we have an opportunity to understand each other in a different way. But there's always complications, it seems. And I think this idea of native journalism, I think really helps us to share on a wider audience and a wider platform. But I think there's also some complications in that. Even when
did you say wider or whiter?
Wider. W-I-D.
What? White?
Wider.
Wide. Okay. Go ahead.
Okay, as in a shape, not a color. Wider. Okay, what was I saying? Okay, yeah, so even when I say the word native journalism, I mean, I in a way, I'm a little confused, because my view or my experience with native journalism has been somewhat, I don't know, I wouldn't say skewed, but I have an experience, and we talked about it at the end of the last episode, which should be or at the end of the last episode, we talked about this idea of censorship. So this was my understanding, or this is kind of what my experience is. You have these tribal newspapers, and the editors or the reporters or whoever they are, they have to engage in level of censorship. Okay, I'm gonna self-censor myself right now, and I'm
from the talking. Greek, from the Greek word of sensi, which means to smell.
I'm gonna Google that, and I'm gonna discredit you right off the bat. No, okay. So
he's trying to censor me.
So you need to self-censor. I shouldn't have to censor you. So this is what I'm talking about. Self-censor. This is what I'm wondering. And this is the question. Is self-censorship, is this a type of traditional value? So for example, should we remain sensitive to internal criticism for fear of showing weakness externally?
I don't know what that means.
Ah, come on. Okay. Let me say this. So should we say, not say that maybe our tribal government's not doing so great in a journalistic sense to avoid showing weakness among a group of other tribal folks? We want everybody to know that we're doing great. We don't want people to know our internal conflicts so as to increase our standing or our stature among tribes. Copy? No, still not coming in?
I get no.
What? Okay.
Because then that turns from credible journalism to propaganda.
Okay.
And then,
but who's defining credible journalism?
Yeah.
It's not Indians.
Well, wow, you just got really radical.
Well,
you just went to the extreme.
In my experience,
okay,
this is Luella talking. In my experience,
yeah,
most, if not all, natives who have embraced the idea of like journalism in its pure form,
okay,
are, you know. How do I want to say this without sounding like a radical 70s Indian? But they are, they were radical 70s Indians, right? Yeah. That's when this era of pure journalism for,
well, I mean, for they grew their braids back, so started. That was something.
They started the
for that time period,
what became the Native American Journalism Association, or the Native American Journalists Association, that started in the 70s, that grew out of that movement of, you know, taking back our culture and taking back our identities as Native people.
Yeah.
And it's all rooted in that time frame of telling our own stories.
Right.
Good or bad,
with we activism.
Tell our own stories. Yeah. In that era of activism, when it started to, you know, gain root in our communities strongly, you know, journalism, it comes along with that activism. There's always been storytellers,
okay,
with change making. There's okay. They yeah. exist together.
Right.
And so, you know, I feel like I've been blessed to kind of come up in the world of journalism, knowing those, some of those people who were there in that era, and those people mentored me and helped me grow in my profession and in my skill set. And the mentality that I have when it comes to my work as a journalist is directly influenced by, you know, their spirit and their understanding of what journalism is.
Right.
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 And so most people who take their role seriously as Native journalists are not propagandists.
Okay. Okay.
Did you use the word propagandist?
I did.
Propagandist.
Did you like that?
That's awesome. Hey, you know, okay. I get that. I get it. And you know, we have a rich audience. I mean, a rich set of guests here today with Luella's help to bring some folks in, some journalists who have some experience who might also want to chime in on this. And I'm really interested. And I'm really curious. We have two guests
so
today.
So let's...
Oh, yeah, take it over.
Let me introduce our two guests, because I think that now, some remember, of their not, credentials...
Okay, this is not like...
Some of their credentials, I think, are important to know.
Okay, well, this isn't so, like... Okay, this isn't
we're,
like...
We're not
okay,
going to go... we're not going to go into like this realm of like 20 minutes of introductions, no, but I think it's important to know that Lori
right.
Edmo has worked for the Chauvin News for 23 years.
That's
when,
a long time.
When it comes to tribal journalism and Native media, she has seen it all.
Yes.
She has worked in many non-tribal media outlets as well.
Yes.
So she has a rich and diverse resume.
I would agree. A wealth of experience.
Yes, definitely. And then.
Go ahead.
So she's going to bring a lot of different and interesting stories to the podcast. And then we have Dalton Walker, who is a national correspondent for Indian Country Today in its newest form, which is an online. National online platform. So Dalton has worked for tribal media as well as mainstream media. He's done tons of work. He came up in the kind of my generation of Native journalism. Lori is like one generation behind us. So
he's the MySpace generation.
Yes. We're rocking MySpace. So we have two different perspectives, I think. On the issues. So let's bring on both of our guests and maybe they could tell us a little bit about themselves. And
well, I think the question I'm wondering what their thoughts are on this rambling I just spouted off. I don't know if it made sense, but I want to know.
Well, for me, I'm not a propagandist. And I've always believed in my work is that our tribal people have the right to know what's going on within our tribal government and our community. And I've always believed that. And oftentimes I've gotten into trouble and I've been fired twice. And most recently it was October, but I got my job back and both times I got my job back, but it's pretty crazy and it's not an easy position to be in. And it's right now I'm so burned out on working in a hostile work environment that I'm ready to change my profession.
Wow.
Which is unfortunate, but to me, I need peace in my life. And, you know, I've done what I need to and although I do believe I'd like to keep telling our stories, but at some point you have to decide when it's enough or to have some peace.
Right. And I think part of that experience of being able to tell the truth and to be supported in that, I think that's something we all strive for in the things that we do. And so it's not a surprise when we get into any profession and we're limited in what we can and can't do, it becomes quite the struggle. But I think it's important what you said. We all have the right to know. And I think research and journalism work in different ways, but very similar ways to do that. The difference, I think, or one of the constraining factors in that right to know is, again, who controls that right. And a lot of times there are constraints on that. What do you think about that, Dalton? What is your take on it?
Luella was getting my hopes up there. I thought she was going to be bringing back MySpace and we were going to start a MySpace tribal newspaper and I was all set to go.
That'd be awesome. Get your Jenkos back out. Yeah, okay, go ahead.
When I started out, as Luella was saying, I thought the most I could do or the most impact I would have would be working in the mainstream industry. At the time, I thought tribal journalism just wasn't for me. Like, I thought maybe I could reach more people to that extent. Maybe I could help young Indigenous people break through, the more I go, the more I bring with them type of mindset. So I did that for a few years, and I had a good time and learned a lot and did my best. But it always felt something inside me that, how come I'm not doing this for people that look like me? How come I'm not doing this for the youth that look up to me to think I'm doing something good? And a few years ago, I had an opportunity to kind of go back to that with a tribal publication. And I'm based in Phoenix, and it worked out because one of the Phoenix Valley tribes, Salt River, had an opening as a manager for their newspaper. And when I got there, I quickly learned some of the limitations we had as a tribal government-owned entity. Yeah. And what our expectations were. And initially, I didn't really push back, because at the same time, you have to think about, well, there's a lot of stories to tell. We have to keep an eye on the newsmakers. We have to keep an eye on what's happening. We have a school district inside. We have a tribal government. How far can I push the envelope when it comes to stories that some might see as maybe controversial or a topic that the tribal government will not like? So there was a heck of a balance I had to have. And for me, the part that I was kind of worried about was I wasn't from here. I learned a lot. I met people, I talked to people, and I tried to get as comfortable as I could. I did have the connection as an Indigenous person. So we did have that, and I did meet great people, made friends and great sources. So that was an obstacle too. And second, another obstacle was balance. Should we do something that could jeopardize our job, our income?
Yeah.
That maybe could be drawn out and might not even turn. There was always those type of things. So it wasn't like A to B, oh, I'm going to get this and this is going to be righteous and great.
Yeah.
There was always so much in between.
Yeah.
So everything had to be turned in. And at the same time, there are so many stories out there, so many feature stories, so much happening.
Yeah.
That I don't want to say fortunate, but we didn't really have to face that issue from the tribal government, at least my brief time there.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, I think you talk about this idea of where you're most impactful, you know, whether I should be housing my ideas and my passion into mainstream to, I guess, do work in that way, or whether I should be inside the tribal community doing work in among that audience. And I think one of the challenges that we face both in research and journalism is this idea of, again, this censorship, or this, you have to dance around topics that people think are overly sensitive, which can be a carryover from the days of oppression, you know, and I don't know if you experience that in journalism, where something is so sensitive that you can't talk about it because you'll upset people, because they think that you're opening the door to something that other people should not know about. And that was kind of what I was getting at about this idea of self-censorship, you know, in our work. No matter what we do, we have to decide the topic, and we have to decide if it's going to be meaningful for the community. But then we also have to look at our society as a whole, our tribal societies, and say, is this something that's just for us, or is this something that's also for the average audience to consume? And so, you know, we apply a self-censor in a way. And I'm wondering, in your guys' experience, to what degree do you apply that sensitivity?
Well, for me, because I work in my own community and in my own tribe, and I work among our tribal people, then I think in some instances, for example, when there's tragedy or violence that might have occurred in the community, especially like a murder or a standoff or something like that, then sometimes, you know, I really have to consider, you know, how it's going to impact the families. And for example, we had a triple murder a number of years ago that was drug related. And unlike a lot of the non-Native journalists, then, you know, I always believe it's important to let the families grieve and not be right in their face to ask questions or comments or, you know, want to demand a comment right away. And oftentimes I leave it up to them if they want, you know, to come forward and say something, and or else I'll ask them, you know, I'll message them or text or see if they want to say anything. And so in those instances, I think it's a matter of respect. Having respect for your own people and give them the time they need to grieve. Because I had my brother, he passed away a number of years ago, and he died. You know, it wasn't nothing to that the cops were involved or anything, and mm-hmm. he died from cirrhosis. But the news media was calling my mom's house because he was at my cousin's house where he was found. And they kept bugging my mom, wanting her to comment and whether or not it was a suspicious situation. And finally, I just had to tell them, you know, that, you know, this just to back off and let give us time to grieve, because it wasn't something that, you know, it wasn't related to a suspicious death or anything. And so that was difficult. So a lot of times you just have to have some respect and back off and let them have time to grieve. And then we had another instance where there was a question about a ceremony that we do. And a woman who was a Miss Indian World, and she wanted to do this ceremony at the Gathering of Nations. And, you know, it's not something that we do for the non-Indian public or anybody else. We do it here. And so that became a big controversy, and it caused a lot of discussion and conflict in the community. So it became before our Native American Church Board, who, you know, who addresses these things, and also our culture committee. And to me, I felt like that was a situation that needed to be kept within our community and within our tribe, because there was a lot of conflict over it. And I listened to all the perspectives on it, and I chose not to write about it because it was a real sensitive subject. And it was, I think that all the discussion that occurred within those meetings and the community, you know, within our people ourselves was good. And it, you know, it helped, you know, help people get it out of their system and give their perspectives. But I felt like it was something that shouldn't be written about, although I had all the information and could have. And then they ended up doing it anyway. But
they wrote about it?
No. Oh. They ended up having that Gathering of Nations. So it was just a big controversy. And that was one that I think, I guess, could be referred to as self-censorship.
Right. Yeah. Dalton, do you have any experience in a similar way? Because I hear a common theme coming up, and I'll follow up with that, unless Lou has something else. But Dalton, do you have a follow up on it?
Self-censorship, I can think of a few things while at this tribal media that came up in my journalism hat, partly because I had worked in mainstream journalism for roughly 8 years prior, so I felt my news judgment was one of my strengths. And there was some things that happened that I wondered why we didn't do. And I would ask my supervisor kind of what's how we approach this. And you can kind of see sometimes that the topic was touchy, and this topic was related to gaming. The tribe I worked for was able to provide gaming revenue for its citizens, and they had something happened to the casino, and I was like, why aren't we reporting on this? So, and I was getting ready to start, but then my supervisor said, no, let's wait. Let's just wait. So we kind of sat on it. Mm-hmm. And then we just really never came back to that beyond what the gaming casino told us. So it wasn't, I didn't do any journalism per se on this topic. And I did get some people out reaching out to me and asking me like, hey, what's going on? Why haven't you guys done anything?
Yeah.
And that kind of fell on me. Like, how much do I pursue this? And I go back to that. Well, I like this job. It's fun. It's great. I'm making a paycheck. Do I really want to get in trouble? Do I really want to be on thin ice with my employer by pushing back?
Yeah.
So there was some definitely, and I can think of maybe a couple other scenarios like that. And
yeah,
but it was minimal in a bigger picture. I think the quality of journalism we did during my time there was pretty good. But yeah, there were some misses, and a lot of it fell on the people who made the decisions that were above me.
Right. Right. Aaron, I see you looking pensive. I see you. There's something brewing up there. And Luella, too. This is the least I've heard Luella and Aaron talk. What's up, man?
What, did you say pensive?
Pensive, yes.
I don't even know what that means.
I have so many examples I want to talk about.
Mike Pensive?
Mike Pence. If.
I want to hear it. Let's hear Lou's examples.
I want to hear what she has to say. Oh, she's rubbing her hands together. All right. It's going to get.
Okay. So.
Like a villain. Like an evil villain.
Yeah.
So, some of my examples are because I'm a tribal member, but some of them are because I cover a small community.
Yeah.
Our sheriff is a tribal member. And when I first started at the paper, one of his children died in a car accident. And I wasn't sure how to handle it. And so I talked to my publisher at the time. And I said, I think we need to write about it, but I don't think I should be the one to write about it because I felt really disrespectful asking him about his, you know, his dead kid, right. You know, the day after she died.
Like, right.
It puts me in an awkward position. Because not only because he's a tribal member, but because when I was a kid, he was one of our neighbors. And like, I know him.
Yeah.
And he's like, okay, well, I'll try to get a hold of him. So that kind of took me out of the equation. But we couldn't get a hold of him anyway because he doesn't like us. And then when the whole...
Well, that's a whole different story. I kind of want to hear that one.
That's an interesting
Sounds
story.
Familiar.
Yeah. He's had beef with the paper since forever ago. Since one of his first terms. He's had several terms. But then when the whole... thing happened with Selena Not Afraid, that was really difficult for me to cover, not only because she was so young when she went missing and subsequently was found dead,
yeah,
but she was in the same class as my boys in middle school. And one of my boys just was having a really difficult time with it,
right?
And every time we heard a rumor or, you know, something this or something that, it was just like, oh my God, you know, as journalists, we're pretty dark anyway. And it's sad to say that we get excited when there's crime news and car chases and potential investigations that we get to follow and court cases. And
yeah,
but this was so hard. This one was so difficult. And then they had a memorial when she was found. So we went up, my son wanted to go up to Billings to the Rims and go to the memorial. So we went and I was like, well, maybe I'll get some pictures. So, you know, I snapped a couple pictures and then I was like, I'm not going to work. I'm not working anymore.
Yeah.
And I just had to be a person, you know, I just had to be a human being. And there are a lot of situations like that where you just, you have to stop and you just, you have to be a person.
Right.
And it, they seem to be, it seems to happen more now that I'm covering my own community.
Uh-huh.
Like the times I have to stop and just be a human.
Yeah.
Occur more now because these aren't like when I was working in Missoula or Great Falls, it was just like, oh, la, la, no, they're just human robots. You know, they're just pegs on a board.
Cribbage.
But yeah, but here they're people, they're like relatives and friends and the children of my classmates. And okay, Sarah stops at pretty places, you know, that I grew up with her mom and aunties, you know, they're related to me. And Henny Scott, you know, she went missing and was found dead. I grew up with her stepdad. He was always at her house. They're not just numbers. They're not just cases. So it's like you have to take a step back. Some details you don't want to report because you're too close to it. Not because the community is too close to it, but you're too close to it. We had a, there was an incident at the fair, at the 4-H fair. One of the grandparents of one of the kids who was showing animals at the fair convinced one of the organizers to let him in. The fair was kind of like shut down to the public because of COVID.
Yeah.
And only people who lived in the household with the children who were showing animals could go.
Uh-huh.
And this guy was a grandparent and he didn't live in the same house. So he couldn't go. But he convinced the organizer to let him go because it was his last grandchild who would be in the fair. Uh-huh. And, oh my goodness, you know, it was culture and heritage, you know, that whole thing.
Yeah.
So she's like, well, you have to wear your mask.
Kind of a big thing, well, but I mean,
you have to wear your mask. And so he puts his mask on.
She sounded like the guy on Old Brother.
That's exactly it.
our culture and heritage.
Yeah. So he puts his mask on. He goes and sits down and they start the pig show, which is my favorite show at the fair because I've learned a lot since my boy started FFA. And these little piggies are running around the ring and he takes his mask off.
This is devolving. Okay. All right. I'm going to stick with it.
No, listen.
Okay.
It gets so much better. He takes his mask off and one of the other organizers is like, hey, that guy took his mask off. You might want to go talk to him. And that it was like under strict orders from the health board. The only way they were going to let this fair go on was if everyone had a mask on.
So they stopped the whole fair.
So the original organizer who let him in went and confronted him and said, hey, you need to put a mask on. And he refused.
Uh-huh.
And it started kind of a yelling and screaming thing.
Yeah.
And she said, well, if you're not going to comply, you need to leave. And so him and his wife stormed out. And then he got into his truck and he said, it's people like you. Oh, people like you are the reason we carry guns in this country.
Jeez.
And then he said, you'd be sorry if I had my gun right now or something to that effect. And then he reversed his truck about 25 feet and then put it in drive and went right for her and turned at the last minute and hit her with the side view mirror.
Huh.
So they called the cops and this woman's in a tizzy and her co-organizers in a tizzy and they call the cops. He ends up getting charged with misdemeanor assault and disorderly conduct.
Yeah.
And he is the majority owner of a bank in town.
Okay.
So 2 days later, they have the livestock sale at the fair.
Uh-huh.
And both of my boys are selling a pig and a steer. And guess who buys one of my boys' steers?
Tell
that
me.
That bank that he owns.
Okay.
So I was like, Well, then I found out that at the health board meeting, they had a special health board meeting to discuss this incident.
Yeah.
And the chairman of the health board meeting told the health board that this man is the kind of bully that we cannot allow in this county. His actions need to have consequences. And blah, 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 blah. So the bank that he owns rescinded a several hundred thousand dollar donation that they had pledged to the hospital that the health board chair works at.
Uh-huh.
They're doing a capital campaign to remodel the hospital.
Yeah.
And that bank is like, well, if you're going to act like that, we're going to take our money back.
Uh-huh.
So I think to myself, my kid's supposed to get $5,500 from this bank. Yeah. They had no trouble pulling all their hundred thousands of dollars away from a hospital.
Yeah.
Just for being, you know, making a comment in a health board meeting that wasn't public.
Uh-huh.
If I wrote a story about this man's actions and the charges that are pending,
yeah,
I do not doubt that they would pull the money from the fair.
Right.
So we sat on the story till the check cleared from the fair.
Uh-huh.
Because I didn't think it would be fair for my kid to not get paid for all that hard work just because we wrote a story.
Right.
So, I mean, and that's just small town politics.
Yeah, I was going to say, that happens.
And that's one of the hard things. Yeah, that's one of the hard things about working for a small town paper. Everybody knows everybody, and they all know everyone else.
Right.
But you kind of, it's all about that balance of, you know, should we run this now? Should we run it next week? Should we cover this now? Or should we wait till it actually goes to trial? Or, you know, all of that. Is it going to go to a plea agreement? Because if it's going to go to a plea agreement, maybe we should just wait till that happens. It's kind of hard. And my motto, you know, as a journalist is, if everybody's happy with your coverage, you're not doing your job right. Half of the town should be pissed off at you because you covered it. And the other half of the town should be pissed off at you because you didn't cover something.
Right.
Right. That's everyone true. At all times should be mad at you if you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
I'm used to it. Everyone's always pissed at me, so that's fine. It means at least I'm doing my job.
Well, that's interesting in a lot of ways, because it kind of goes against the idea of the guarantee of freedom of press. I don't know, maybe, you know, where we're trying to emphasize, you know, this idea of freedom of expression, you know, within, I guess, of course, some certain limits. You know, you can't be obscene, you can't slander people, those kind of things. But especially in Indian country, you know, the theme that came up last on that last episode and today is this idea of reporting on death. It seems to be a sensitive or at least a unique topic for Native journalists, but then also this idea of reporting on very private matters or things that are held very sensitive in the tribe, like a ceremonialism. So death and ceremonialism seem to not have a place or have an obscure place in Native journalism. And I'm wondering if this is a unique marker or of tribal journalism, or is this something you also see in mainstream? I don't know.
You know, we covered a car wreck in August 2019, a beat truck. The kid was texting.
Uh-huh.
And he was going around a curve, and he actually went into the wrong lane as he went into the inside lane as he was turning on the curve, and he plowed into a car. And the two people in the front of that car died, and the person in the back was severely injured. And it caused a big old fire in a field.
Uh-huh.
And that car was thrown into that field. And then that's what started the fire. And his truck rolled into the ditch. And we got a photo of kind of the wreckage afterward.
Yeah.
There was no blood. There were no bodies. There was no cops on the scene. There was no police tape, nothing. It was just two wrecks in the black field.
Yeah.
And we put it on a small-ish photo on the bottom of the front page. And the community was outraged.
Yeah.
Outraged because we were so disrespectful because two people died. Mm-hmm. They were non-natives. So mm-hmm. I went back into 2 years worth of newspapers, and there were 15 stories with photos about car wrecks on the front page of the paper. They were all natives. Mm-hmm. And there was not a single phone call or email about those stories.
Hmm.
So I guess it just depends sometimes on the color of the people in the car wrecks.
I would suppose. That's, I mean, it's not surprising. Not surprising in the least. But I'm wondering, our guests, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I want to say one quick thing.
Yeah.
I want to say how much I admire Lori and Luella for what they're doing and what they do now, because this is their readership, are people they see all the time.
Yeah.
And to do cover stuff in the age of social media can be really scary. People share so much stuff, and yeah. people know how to navigate it so well that almost everything is out there. So you might think you do something great or a great story. Moment it goes up, moment it's published, you might get some slander against you for whatever reason. And it's hard to take that. And I imagine it's that much more when you work with people you see or you know, your cousins, all this type of thing. So I just want to throw that out, that I really admire Lori and Lola for what the work they have done and the work they continue to do.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
I think that's the hardest thing is a lot of your relatives are what you have to, you know, who you have to write about. And we had a situation where there was a murder and both of them were related to me, the alleged suspect and then the one who was murdered. And so when I got the grand jury report then, and I had a heck of a time getting it, then it was really hard to decide, you know, what needs to be told and what doesn't, because it was so grisly. And it was, we were just, you know, fortunate that more people weren't killed, because it was, one of them was just out of his mind on drugs and he was just shooting. And so, you know, I think that's really hard to do that. And then we had another instance where this white guy, he was a construction worker working out here on the res, and he went and murdered his girlfriend and then ended up burying her at that construction site, and they were looking for her body and they found it there. And so, you know, I wrote a story about it and put it on our Facebook page, and boy, was that ever something I had to monitor, because the comments were just, a lot of the comments were just racist. And so it's really difficult to try to police those kind of things, especially when you write something controversial on your Facebook page, because it's like a 24-hour deal. You got to just keep an eye on it, and it's hard. And sometimes I debate whether or not I should put it up or not. But then on the other hand, it's in the interest of public safety. You know, our people have a right to know what's going on, and they want to know. And in some ways, you know, they get used to it. And then if we don't immediately report something, then they get mad. So, you know, it's kind of like you constantly, you know, some, like Luella said, somebody's always going to be mad at you. So, but, you know, you just have to keep hanging in there and try to do the best you can. But sometimes it can be really wearing. And
I'd imagine
when you, it's, but, you know, it's just a matter of doing your job.
Yeah. Yeah. The job has to be done. And it seems like, just from what the message I'm hearing is, you kind of have to be controversial, or, I mean, you can't just play to the happy stories. You have to play to what's really unfolding in the community, which is always a mix of everything. So I can imagine that that's going to be a pretty tough job. But I don't know, it brings up a lot of questions for me. Really trying to understand, like the purpose, what the purpose of journalism, and especially native journalism, you know, I'm getting a little bit confused by the work that we have to do or the work that we want to do, and then some of the constraints that we find in that. And it's very similar to research, you know, we have to monitor what we research and what we don't research based on some external factors. And I don't like that. I don't really like that, but I think we have to hold to some particular values. And I'm wondering, this is the question I was trying to get out in the last episode, is the set of values that you adhere to from your profession and from you as a native person, how do those things coincide, or are they very conflicting, if you know what I mean?
Well, I think I'm really fortunate that I got a pretty good education in journalism. Uh-huh. Because I started out at the University of Oregon with their School of Journalism, and I got some really good things that were just ground into me, right, in terms of what's right and what's wrong. And then I transferred to the University of Montana, and that's where I graduated from. But I think having a really good foundation for journalistic principles really makes a difference. And then also, I'm fortunate that I have tribal elders who are really strong, and they've taught me a lot about our culture and traditions and our Diniwap or Tinichua, even that means our tribal teachings. And so I use that as a foundation for, you know, what I do with my work and things like that. And if I have questions or if I have, you know, any doubt, then I'll go to them to, you know, find out, you know, my grandma, she really kept me in place when she was alive. And I'm thankful for that.
Yeah.
Because she, you know, she made me think about things, and I really appreciate that. And my mom too, I could always go to her, and she's gone now, but you know, it's really important to have a good foundation and have strong people behind you who you can, you know, reflect back on or who taught you a good foundation.
Yes. Yeah, pretty important. Pretty important. You know, this is a good time. Let's take a little breather here. Let's do a little intermission, and then we'll get back to this. Because I have a lot of questions. And hopefully I can drag some answers out of people. You guys ready? You guys ready to get drug? Take a drag out of the pipe of knowledge? This is another song off that same reel. I think it's the same folks singing around. And, you know, it's, I wish I knew. I wish I knew more about it. Some good tunes, some really good tunes on these mystery tapes here. And the fact that you can't, that I don't know who they are, we got to try to take some clues by the style of the singing, the beat of the drum, even kind of the background noise. You kind of get some clues on where this tune might be from. And, you know, really in the work that, kind of the work that we do, Aaron and I and others, you know, we try to compile all the evidence we can into a story that will hopefully share, or transmit some knowledge forward. One of the questions, I guess, or one of the, um, one of the hallmarks of, I suppose, science in a way is that the philosophy of science says it's free of bias, free of the researcher's own thoughts and opinions, and the data that's collected should reflect that. Aaron, do you think you're colorblind? Are you colorblind to the things that you do?
No.
No. You're definitely see color in the work you do. I mean, you have to.
And I'm biased.
Yeah. We've gone down this road and we've talked about it. The ability to remain unbiased in our work, that seems impossible, right? I mean, I suppose if we were studying microbes in Antarctica, I don't know. Maybe we wouldn't bring so much of our own bias. I don't know. Microbes and I don't know. Let's get a drag off the pipe of knowledge. I can't believe that came out of my mouth.
I can.
You can.
I can.
That's, yeah, I can. I've heard you say weirder things, man.
What?
Yeah, one time we were all at a movie and it was like Blade 2 and there were boxes and it had like Chinese writing and you convinced us that it translated to tasty moo cow.
I don't remember that.
Dumb kids were like, oh, really? How do you know how to read Japanese?
Cripes. Yeah, I don't remember that. I think you just fabricated that story.
Nope. I was there.
You were there.
There was like four of us there.
Tasty moo cow. Oh, man. Yeah. I don't know. Color blindness. We can't be. I don't think native journalism. I mean, Luella threw down the professionalism card on the last episode and said, no, we adhere to strict professional code of conduct. Yeah. Okay.
I call BS on now that though.
I do too.
We try our artists. I try so hard to be unbiased.
Why though?
Because it's not my job to interpret what's going on in the world. I just tell about what's going on in the world.
But that's all journalism is still.
No, that's what TV journalism is. That's what Tucker Carlson is.
No.
He's just a doofus in a tie, I'm telling you.
We're all doofuses. So all that you're doing.
TV journalists are not journalists. Yeah. And TV news anchors, they just read the newspaper. I tell you how I know because when I interned in Seattle, they read one of my stories word for word.
All print journalism do is read Facebook.
No, we don't. We scroll Facebook and then we call the sources.
I think there's been this kind of indoctrinated attitude in journalism that they're somehow unbiased and that native journalism have bought into this idea that this notion of journalism is this kind of patriotic duty, when in fact your job is to serve a community and the needs of a community. Now, our needs in native country is different than that of the United States. So what is news to some people isn't news to us. And I don't understand the need for journalism to try to be a round peg in a square hole.
Right.
But what are you assuming that native journalists cover that is not useful?
Most of it.
Like what? crime?
I'm just messing with you.
Like
Dalton, you were going to say something.
Don't just mess with me, bro.
Dalton.
I was just going to mention, someone mentioned Facebook.
Yeah.
And for me, Facebook is a real reporting tool, as in, for two reasons. One, it's gossip, but we check it out. Like Lula said, like we might see something, might hear something, but we're not going to say, oh, because of Facebook, we're going to give somebody a call. We're going to talk about it. It's kind of like the auntie back in the res used to call us and tell us certain things they heard. Basically the same type of reporting. Like you're not going to take it for verbatim. But there might be something there for us to look into that might turn into a story. At least that's what the good journalists can do.
Right. Well,
if they'll be on the record.
Yeah,
if they'll go on the record. I mean, I've gotten a lot of stuff off of social media. I don't say social media is, it's not my primary source. It's like when you're desperately trying to find something and you go to Wikipedia and then you click on the source and it takes you to the bottom where they got it. Then you go there and then you go to the actual source and then you go from the actual source to find like the academic documents and then you go there. It's like that when you know when you're doing research and you're just desperate to figure something out and then you follow the web all the way around. That Facebook is like a starting point.
Well, I find out about all the high-speed chases on Facebook.
The high-speed chases or the house fires.
Facebook has also have been kind of up and down, as in it's been an outlook for tribal governments or our tribal leaders or somebody who has a connection to Indian country to say what they want to say the way they want to say it.
Yeah.
Where that wasn't the case a decade or so ago. So they have that where if I want something from someone, but they have a quote Facebook statement, they'll just say, well, I said it on Facebook. I'm not going to bother talking to you because they said what they wanted to say already. So it's good that it's out there, but at the same time, it's not, because then you're not going to get that one-on-one time sometimes.
Well, just like Hardin School District, they put all of their press releases on Facebook and they won't email anything to me.
Huh. So you guys are just confirming what I said. I don't know why there was a uproar when I said it.
Well, it doesn't make sense. Like,
because you guys just exhibit A, exhibit B. Can I call to the court exhibit A? You said, no, that's not what we do. And then the last 5 minutes has been giving me examples of doing just that.
We're saying that there are different levels of usefulness to social media platforms.
We still have to verify. Can we?
The journalists will verify.
Can we agree, though, that most news is just commentary?
No.
Even print? No. It's all commentary.
No. We got two no's.
No. I'm just saying it because it has to be said.
Aaron, you're right. Well, no, I agree with Aaron.
What do you read? The opinion page and watch Tucker Carlson?
I don't know who Tucker Carlson is. I thought you were talking about a guy from Browning when you first said it. I don't know who Tucker Carlson is. I've never even heard his name.
He won state then basketball.
Yeah, he was a state champion.
96.
Yeah, I don't really watch the news. I turn it on just because the weather lady's name is Majestic Storm. And our daughter loves to watch Majestic Storm do the weather. I just think it's crazy that our weather lady's name is Majestic Storm.
That's not her real name.
It is.
No, it's not. She changed it.
I worked with a hydrologist named Steve Flood, so it can happen.
That's not his real name either.
Okay, so wait a minute. Okay,
your conversation point is interesting because it calls on what's been happening the last four or five plus years, where there's a distrust with people and news organizations.
Yeah.
It didn't help that the last 4 years the media was basically wailed on by people in charge at a national level. So
yeah.
And also a lot of people don't understand what journalism is. And I don't want to say that's their fault. That's kind of part of journalism to explain what that is. And then there's a lot of interpretation, too. Uh-huh. And there's a lot of different outlets. So there's so much going on. And honestly, I think a lot of people just don't care. They want to find their agenda. They want to find what works for them and how that makes sense to them. And it doesn't matter if it's credible or not. They're just going to go down that rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of the fight we have right now is you want to be credible, you want to be accurate, you want to be able to tell a story that has journalism beliefs.
See that, Lou? So did you see that? That's how you argue. Hal Dalton did that? He shot me down. He shot everything I said down, and I'm not offended one bit. There you go.
Okay. So I want to insert something in here because I was feeling Aaron's passion. I was feeling it, but I don't know if I quite understood what he was, because they got in this little sibling shouting match, well, which was pretty cool to capture, you know. That was pretty awesome.
Most of what I said, I was just saying it to make Lou mad. but I mean, it comes from somewhere. I'm definitely guilty of not trusting the news. I think I've learned to support my sister's work, but I don't typically support journalism. And I'm guilty of that. That's on me. And because of my own whatever. And plus, there always has been this, and I'm just going to say it, okay? I'll say it.
Okay.
There's always been this rift between like researchers, especially in the social sciences, and journalism, and how there's been certain standards placed on us as documenters of social behavior. Yeah. But those same standards are not placed on journalism, which is essentially the same thing, but in the now, right? And I've always been like, well, why do we have to go through all this work? Like if we want to interview someone, but they don't. So in fact, you were in a meeting one time when I said, well, why don't we just call what we do? What did I say? Ethnojournalism or something like that? And the lady was like, what? I confused her. So under the national standards of law, we have to follow the Institutional Review Board. Which under the law, it says there's a thing called the common rule. What the common rule is like kind of the guidelines to how we set what our protocols are, like if we apply to do research, right? And this is all because of the Havasupai and all that. But under what's exempt from the common rule is journalism.
Yeah.
Which me as an ethnographer, that's all I am.
Right.
I'm just a historic journalist. I mean, I just look at events and I talk to people about them, you know? So I never quite understood why that standard was placed on me, but not on journalists.
Yeah. That's an important one.
To piss my sister off.
Yeah. That's easy to do. Sounds like very volatile.
It's easy.
It just took two little comments. But let me walk back because I want to come back to what you just said.
And Lori and Dalton supported what I said when I threw the Facebook comment out there.
Not at first though.
Not at first. I got what
I don't know.
Wanted though.
I don't. You made some rage happen. This is the thing, and I'm gonna come back to what Aaron just said. But I had two things that I wanted to mention, and this is kind of what I picked up. And Aaron's first message about, you know, really what is the purpose of journalism? And so I go back to Lori's story about this ceremony that these people were trying to do at Gathering of Nations. And there was this whole community uproar. I don't know if that's the right word, but there was this dialogue. Now, that's the kind of stuff I'd be interested in reading about. But we don't report on that.
Yeah. As soon as you said that, I was like, that would actually be a cool story. Not the story of the ceremony, but of the controversy of it.
Yeah.
Like, because those are day-to-day problems in Indian country. Like people have those questions. Like we want to know stuff like that. So, I was going to go off, but go ahead.
No, go off. Cause that I think that's where I wanted to reinsert what you're saying about this difference between research and journalism. Because we could report on that and get some really good advancement of knowledge on internal structures of tribal ways without, you know, with being sensitive to things that we don't want.
But see, all of that stuff is still who defines that? Who defines what sensitive is? Who defines even what events should be placed in the paper? The only thing I can come up with is time. The only difference between what I do and what my sister does is time. Yeah. I wait 40 years before the story is important to me.
Right.
Where it's 40 minutes for her or whatever, you know, for journalism.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, we did end up reporting on it being held at Gathering. And there was some issue with our reporter because she went there and she was not wanting to you know, wanting us to show photos of it because of the controversy. But I said, but it happened. So we have to. And so we have to report on it. So we did.
Yeah.
So, and, you know, it wasn't a major part of the story, but we still, you know, printed photos and said that it happened. So, but, you know, the whole other part that was behind the scenes that happened prior to it, you know, that was something that I chose not to write a story about previous to it.
Right. And it seemed like there's something that, that holds us back from doing those things, whether we feel compelled to do it or not. And it drives me back to the idea of ethics and the virtues that we hold. So a lot of times those are guided by external forces, which is common in tribal groups, right? So we get pressured not to do something.
Well, for me, it was just a matter of respect for our for our elders and going to these meetings because it was really sensitive and I heard all sides and, you know, to me, it was out of respect to them on what their beliefs were. Right. And to me, that was why I decided, you know, what I did. And, you know, I don't have any regrets.
Yeah.
Although people probably question it, but, you know, that was what I decided. And in talking with some people, then that was what I decided.
Yeah. I mean, we face those kind of things every day. I think, you know, we get guided by our community because we want to encourage this sense of cooperation. You know, we're in a tribal group and we want to be, you don't want to be the person like who said it, the person that nobody likes, especially if you're a journalist, if you're a native journalist and you're notorious in the community for not being liked, you're not going to be able to get a whole lot of news, it seems like. And so to maintain that balance of being influenced by your community and then being influenced by your professional pursuit to cover all the news colorblind and undefined by external pressures, that seems like to be a pretty tough job, especially in Indian country. I don't know if that's, you feel, if this is mainstream media people feel that same way.
I want the record to reflect, though, that Lou pet was petting a cat for roughly 4 minutes straight. Like she didn't and now you notice her demeanor's changed. So I made her mad. She picked up a cat.
And comfort
she,
animal.
She comforted herself. And I want to applaud you for that, Lou. I'm proud of sister.
That's a great
instead of be combative, you weren't combative as you like in our childhood.
Just wait till you get here.
In our childhood, she was very combative. And in this case, she said, you know what? Smell the roses, blow out the candles. And good for you.
You know, people who talk like that have spent a lot of time in therapy, so I applaud you as well. But I do want to say something podcast related. Thank you.
Okay. Okay. Reel it in.
I can't remember now.
We're all related. Can't
remember.
We're all related.
Oh, okay. So
here it is.
There's a flying cat by my head.
Okay.
So I have this brother that came to me with a wonderful story idea.
Yeah.
About how COVID was causing the tribe to lose a lot of culture keepers and language keepers.
Right.
And I thought it would be a great story, but I thought the timing wasn't great because we had just lost one of them, like the 2 days before or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, how am I going to navigate this? Because I'm definitely one of those people who has a hard time going up to a family and saying, hey, you just lost someone. How does that make you feel? And then, you know, taking notes in their face. I hate doing that.
Right.
I've lost a lot of stories to that. You know, I've got a story about the sheriff, the Gazette swam in here and got a story about the sheriff losing his daughter in a car wreck. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The family of Selena gave a big story to the Gazette. There's a couple more incidences where the Gazette has no shame. You know, they'll come in and talk to a grieving family sobbing and crying. And yeah. Oh, how does that make you feel? You know, which is one of the things you learn in journalism school. Don't do that. But, you know, it is what it is. But the way I was raised, the cultural teachings that I hold, you don't do that to right. people. You don't jump right in their grills. So I thought to myself, how are we going to get this a story like this? Because mm-hmm. everyone involved in the telling of that story would be grieving family members. So I got one of my former reporters and asked him, you know, hey, do you think you could do this in an appropriate way? And he was like, oh, sure. Because he knew all of those families, and he said he thinks he could, he thought he could do it. So he asked them, you know, when do you think we could get together and talk about, you know, your loved one who passed, because we want to write this story about how COVID has, you know, taken so many of our culture keepers, and none of them were ready. Because I mean, in our county, we've lost 67 people. Well, 68, I just got a press release yesterday. But within our tribe, it's well over 70. Part of our reservation is not in Bighorn County. And then off-reservation people have brought us well over 70. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of families. Yeah. That's, you know, some of them, it took a couple days. Some of them, it took, you know, as long as 5 or 6 weeks. But it is tragic, and it is, it's not like the grief that comes with this COVID is not like anything I've and it's really overwhelming for our community. And so none of these families are ready to talk. And so I was like, okay, well, when they're ready, they'll be ready. No, the Gazette ran a huge, huge full page with a jump about one of these people who wasn't ready. The family wasn't ready, but the Gazette ran a full page article with photos and a jump. I don't know how they talked to the family if they weren't ready. But to me, that says maybe I value things more than my readership does. Maybe I'm being overly sensitive to my community's needs, because that's not the first, and it's not going to be the last time that I lose a story to another news outlet because I'm being too respectful of my readership. But, you know, I would rather err on the side of caution than offend someone in that type of situation.
Well, it seems like, you know, it seems like the our societies are changing so rapidly, and maybe it's just because I'm getting older and maybe more aware, but, you know, we have to be fluid in the things we do. We have to be fluid in our professions, you know, like Aaron's saying, 40 years from now, that's the story, or whatever. But, you know, things are changing, you know, intergenerationally very, very quickly. And for Native journalism, for Native research, for anything to keep up with the changing trends, I think can be challenging. So, you know, where our values respond to those, I'm, you know, I think, I don't know how much they should change, you know, like you're saying, maybe I should be less sensitive to death, because it's an important thing, especially with, you know, this wave of suicides that happened, this wave of the missing and murdered women, this wave of COVID deaths. You know, you have a responsibility to report on that. Researchers have a responsibility to research that. You know, but we're all trying to do it from a Native angle or from a tribal perspective. And so when in all of that do our tribal's value change, or do our tribal values adapt to responding to that or not?
because we have this always in our face. It's always in our face everywhere you look about decolonizing things, post-colonial mission of whatever, you insert whatever you want in there. And I don't know what purpose that serves really when we're unable to really evaluate our own value systems and to see if our practices are still based in those and to know if our practices are still meeting the needs of our community. I like to say yes. I like to think, yeah, I think it is. But when we adhere to some professional code that maybe doesn't align with that, I don't know. And I'm guilty of it myself. All of us going through Western education, we have to think, are we overly influenced by our profession and are not inserting enough of our own values and ethics into that to do our job better for our communities? I don't know. Somebody say something about that. Ready, go.
Well, I think it's important that, I know that I've taught my kids well, that,
yeah,
you know, they pretty much follow whatever, you know, I've done. I mean, yeah, they're really strong in their beliefs and they're strong in their teachings and,
yeah,
and, they pretty much understand where I come from and, yeah, why I do the things I do. But, and I try to explain to our staff too here that, you know, why it's important to have some respect for and, ethically, you know, do things right and,
yeah,
and try to teach them as best as I can. But, you know, they each have their own, you know, teachings too and their beliefs. And, but, mm-hmm, I just try to explain, you know, why things are the way they are, but also hear their perspectives too. So I'm always open to hearing other, yeah, perspectives and knowing where they're coming from. So hopefully that creates a balance.
Yeah, definitely. Open and willing to listen. That's really, yeah, important value.
And then I'm always learning, you know,
yeah,
being here this long and as old as I am, you know, I still learn things, something all the time, especially, yeah, technologically, because I learned from my staff.
Yeah. Dalton, what say you in that regard with that diatribe that I delivered through the microphone from the pipe of knowledge? Go.
Well, I think what you explained makes sense, and I, right, think it always falls on perspective. Mm-hmm. One thing that caught my thoughts initially was with the pandemic, kind of flipped us all on our head to some, mm-hmm, degree, some worse, some less, and it's also affecting tribal governments,
right,
and decision makers and leaders. Like, there's a window now for a restart of some kind.
Ah, yes.
It'll be interesting to see when you talk about should this type of format, this type of structure, should we continue to do that? Should we start something different?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that will happen. There's a lot of tribal governments out there. There's a lot of Native people out there. So you can't say,
yeah,
all Native people are doing this or not, but it'll be interesting to see what happens moving forward as we kind of gauge this new normal, and it's going to be different, yeah, for everybody. You know, this be kind of really interesting to see what happens.
That's interesting. That is, I wouldn't have thought about it that way, but yes. Aaron, Luella, I seen you stew. I seen a glimmer of disagreement or agreement.
I want the record to reflect that Luella spent 2 minutes lathering her and moisturizing during the podcast straight. So
was it Kiro?
It was not 2 minutes. I just put lotion on my
Jergens?
Hands. They're real dry.
The Jergens?
No, it was.
What is it?
Burt's Bee.
What?
I don't know. It's this.
I got it in the box.
I just want the listeners to know. I just want the listeners to know that Luella is applying self-care.
That's good.
Self-care is important during these difficult times.
So I'll say something and then I got to get going. So
yeah, we're going to wrap right after Luella gives her response. Go ahead. You go.
Well, I want to thank Lori and Dalton for being on the,
for sure,
on the pod.
The terse.
Yeah, on the pod.
The terse pod.
And again, I want to appreciate, I appreciate Sean Dean's vocabulary. It's quite extensive, but I want people to know that some of what I said was just kind of in, I was just messing around. I definitely value journalism, but some of it was just to get my sister all riled up. But I think journalism, and all joking aside, is one of the most valuable tools that people have, especially reliable journalism. For me, man, it seems like it's getting harder and harder to come by. So, yeah. But what I would like to see, and I haven't seen all native newspapers or print journalism, it's just more like not to be afraid to embrace their biases on being tribal. Like, yeah. As a tribal person, I've never read a paper that to me was like scream native. So I would like to see that one day, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So
yeah,
I challenge all of you, be biased.
Be biased. Yeah.
Yeah, but yeah. Thanks again, Lori. Thank you very much. Dalton, thank you very much. But I'll let Luella. No, actually, what I'm going to do is wait for Lou to talk, and then I'm going to interrupt her real quick.
Oh, yeah, do that first.
I don't know why.
So I'm going to do this right now.
I don't know why you're so mean to me. I am the best older sister ever.
I want you guys to know this about my sister. She was always the quickest and always had the strongest vocabulary out of the my brothers and sisters and my cousins that my mother raised. So Lou was the only person I knew that could not, she wouldn't yell, but she could just cut you down with her words. And you would like feel like defeated. So this little bit that I have, this tiny little victory, I hold dear to myself. I'm going to hold it because I've always been very afraid of Luella. And she might be the most intellectual person I know, which is intimidating. Because I can't win an argument with her because I'm scared of her. So,
and he owes me 25% of his master's thesis.
Oh, yeah. There's that.
I edited it.
She was my editor for my thesis, but I'm 400 miles away from her right now. So I'm going to talk smack.
And, yeah, it hurt my brain so hard.
But anyway, thanks again. I'm going to mute my mic and I'll shut up, but thank you guys, Lori, Dalton, and Luella. This isn't over.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So what are we talking about? I don't even know.
I lost it. Well, how about let's do this. You wrap us up with this thought. This is one of the last questions I wanted to ask, and it's not extensive, but really I want to know, since I'm surrounded by these esteemed, highly decorated native journalists, I want to know what's the future? What is the future of native journalism? Given some of the things I said, you know, my lack of knowledge of the profession, but I'm definitely a consumer of native media in my own way. But what is the future? What do you see pushing the boundaries of your profession and especially of your own cultural view on where we need to go with native journalism?
I think really the future of native journalism is treating every story like local news, and really getting that kind of that feeling of close proximity. You know, there's a difference when you read a national news story and a local news story, and there's a reason that local news outlets are read more than national news. There's a reason that these bigger newspapers are failing at a higher rate than local news outlets. And that's because people trust their local newspaper.
Hmm.
If Native journalism is going to survive through these trying times, as people like to say, we need to start treating Native news as local news. I think that in a country today is doing an amazing job at that very thing. I think the way they're covering national news in a way that makes it feel like local news pulls the readers in. And the way that they connect these national issues with kind of local voices helps people understand things on a, on like a human level and not on a on a news level.
Right.
They have coverage up in Alaska and from DC to California, you know?
Right.
All in one place. They do obituaries. You can submit obituaries like your local newspaper. And I think that type of format for an online paper, you know, is the way to go. I think that that type of, you know, that presentation is the future. And then, you know, they have their newscasts, like with Patty, which I absolutely just love her news anchor voice. I love it. I can't perfect mine. But I think these the small tribal papers need to embrace the technology that's available. And I think having podcasts and video and, you know, updated websites, I think are going to push tribal papers into, you know, the next decade.
Yeah.
And if tribal papers are going to go independent, they need to have a better presentation to attract advertisers.
Yeah.
So that's what I think. And just, you know, coverage, coverage, coverage. That's all it is, you know, having the best coverage, having diverse coverage of your community.
Yeah.
You know, it's all about the meat. You know, you can present it as beautiful as you want to, but you need to have something.
Got to be some protein on there.
Yep. And that, I mean, I think everyone would agree that there needs to be substance.
Yeah.
You can have all the style you want, but you have to have substance.
Right.
Yep.
Well, Lori, what are your thoughts? Final thought. What's the,
I think that storytelling is part of our culture, that Native journalism will always be here. But like Luella says, you know, we do have to keep up with the changing times, and technology is really important. I mean, we've had to, you know, we do a lot of videos and we're looking into doing podcasts. So, but it takes money, you know, and that's something that we're pretty limited, but we're pretty frugal with our spending. And, but when we do need to make a purchase, we do, and we do fundraising. So it's made a big difference, but a lot of it too with us in terms of a tribal publication is our tribal leaders need to understand that it's important to have our publication, because, you know, not everybody has internet access or smartphones, and a good majority of our people rely on the newspaper for their news. And so that's why we continue. And, you know, we believe in our people, we believe in our culture, and, you know, that's a big part of our coverage too. So, and to me, it's important to share our stories and tell their stories, because who else is going to do it? You know, and our treaty rights, you know, and it's just really important to carry on. And that's what I try to instill into our people and our staff. And they know it. They firmly believe in it.
Right. Those are some pretty important things, you know, going forward. We talked about a lot of things. I didn't get to everything I wanted to talk about. So I think hopefully we'll, down the road, we'll return back to this topic, especially this idea about the difference between research and journalism in Indian country, you know, such a struggle for Native researchers to research the things we want to or need to, and still be within the ethical guidelines. So I think there's more to explore there. But man, I thank you guys for taking the time out to tell us your experiences and your some of the challenges and successes that you have. And hopefully that we can report back and get some details on the work you've done in the future and see how things are going. Any last words there, Luella? You think we're good? You think we got it?
I think we're good.
You think we're good?
We had a good time.
Did we have a good time? What did the box say? The popcorn box?
It was a box of frozen food and it said tasty moo cow in Japanese.
I don't remember that.
Blade 2. We watched Blade 2 in Benzula.
Tasty
moo. I think it was you, me, and Salisha and Shane.
I believe it.
Yep.
Well, thanks
times,
again.
Good times.
Thanks again, Lori. And then we'll talk. Hopefully we'll get in touch soon.
Okay.
All righty. We're done.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for joining us on this episode. And if you want to learn more about what we're up to, go ahead and search Tribal Research Specialists in Twitter, Facebook, or YouTube, and check out our other sites. And if you want to contribute to the show, go ahead and look us up on Patreon. We would appreciate your donations.